You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I think we are going to lose the contest in the next, like, five chapters. But I think we will defeat Taravangian in the following chapters. I think Dalinar will be in service to Odium, but somehow the shard of Odium is altered in some, Mistborn spoilers, in some, like, Hero of Ages way. The definition of the shard is changed by the end of the book. Welcome back to Following Note on a Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 266, and we're in interlude 17 through chapter 128, entering at long last day 10 of Wind and Truth. Elliot, how are you?
Well, can you believe it, gentlemen? I got a little bit of chills, flipped the page. We did a little bit of reveal last week where we flipped the page and saw the title header for day 10. But here we are actually diving into day 10, part 10 of Wind and Truth. It's taken us a mere 9 months plus to get here. And we are here, and I'm ready for it.
I started my pre-release chapters over a year ago, I believe. So here we are. Paul, how are you?
Magnificent. As Elliot said, it's kind of like chills worthy flipping into day 10, seeing the huge list of names of point of views we're going to be getting and getting into some big stuff right away. We finally made it to day 10. At the date of recording, it is August 21st. We started this book formally reading and recording in November, right? Because we did it before the release.
The final week in November, yeah.
So in November, so it's not too far from a year long, and we still got some pages left.
I believe we have 5 episodes after this week. Paul, do we have a patron?
We do, we do. Thank you for mentioning it. We have a brand new Ardent in the midst. I get used to saying Surgeon by default, but an Ardent. I would like to say a big shout out and thank you to Savannah. Savannah, thank you so much for your support. As all of our supporters, a big thank you. But yeah, welcome, Savannah. We have many Spearmen and Surgeons in the crew. We need some Ardents, so we're grateful to have you on board. So,
Did you break out the fine china for Savannah?
I forgot. I was going to say, I'm desperately running out of vessels. I took flowers out of this vase before coming to record. I pulled flowers out, realized this is not a very practical cup. It's a very tiny little opening at the top. And rinsed it out and put water in there. So I will be drinking sparingly tonight. But thank you so much for your support, Savannah. The flowers hopefully will be fine until after recording.
I just have this mental image of Paul moments before recording, desperately searching through his house like Bilbo Baggins, trying to find some sort of cup, anything that could hold water for the evening.
So you know what's really funny that I noticed tonight? I walked into my kitchen and I opened a cabinet to look for a cup. I did not open the cabinet with the cups in it. Like, we have our cabinet that has our cups and mugs and containers and stuff like that. I did not.
That one's run dry for months now, right?
Yes, that's been gone for a long time. Right. I opened, like, the pantry cabinet looking for, like, an empty container or something and found nothing. Turned around, and on the edge of our kitchen, I see this little flower vase, and I was like, there it is. You know, there. I know I haven't used that one, at least. I bet there is. I'm really talking about my cups a lot here. I do believe that there's probably a cup in my cupboard that I have not used, but it's like a staple cup, and I'm like, oh, I have to have used that at some point. And I've been too afraid to repeat a cup that I haven't bothered trying or bothering to go look back and find every cup that I've used ever. So I saw this and I'm like, I definitely have not used this flower vase. I know that for a fact. I have not used this flower vase. So that's where we are.
Thank you, Savannah.
Thank you, Savannah.
All right. Elliot, can you give us a summary of Interlude 17 into Day 10?
Yeah, I got this. Okay. Two interludes, 17 and 18, to bridge us from day 9 into day 10. The first one is in the point of view of Dieno the Mink, the Herdazian general we've seen a few times. He has been delivered back to Herdaz to go free his people. It does not go well. He doesn't even make it to the town. He gets captured. He's at his execution. And then things start to go a little bit crazy, and a giant great shell the size of a city appears.
Yeah.
And that's the fade to black moment. Anyway,
Sam's really just trying to bust the budget of whatever adaptation takes him on. He's really just trying to dump it on him.
Let's see if they can animate this.
Exactly.
Interlude 18 is, in my notes, I just wrote odium. It's just kind of odium rambling. I don't even really have anything to say about it. It's just odium doing odium things. Chapter 126 starts with Dalinar in the spiritual realm, kind of wrapping up the last of the honor tapes, or whatever we're calling them, the Tanavast reveal. Gets a little bit more information about Gavilar, manages to make it out of the spiritual realm, gets back to the physical realm, has a little bit of a reconciliation moment with the Stormfather, who we've now learned like is Tanavast, basically. We jump over to Adolin real quick, and he is really thinking hard about Dalinar. He kind of spread out across a couple of these chapters, is really wrestling kind of with Maya in conversation with her about Dalinar and himself, and can he accept himself? Can he accept Dalinar? All these things. There's a little bit of that in 126. End of 126, though, is Kaladin and Zeth gearing up for the final push to the final monastery, the Bondsmith Monastery, and they buy a wagon off of random people and then head on. Chapter 127 is some more Adolin and Maya, and Scar and Drahi arrive as a small amount of reinforcements, and then Yonagon cooks up the grand idea of, oh, I'm a thief. I know how to sneak into the palace. Let's go stealth mode and let's sneak into the palace and see if we can occupy the throne room at the key moment when the contest happens, so that we will be in control of Aesir at the time and win the battle for control. So they're going to try that. Dalinar is back and now kind of stealing himself for the contest. And he gets a little mini therapy session from Wit. And Wit tells him a story about the lumberman's son, which I didn't really understand, but I'm excited to talk about. And then chapter 128, we see Kaladin and Nail. Nail drops, well, we kind of knew some of this, but Nail is telling us more about Ishar and what he's done, and apparently he has this idea to build an army to fight Odium, and that army is supposed to be made up of human fused. Hope you're ready for that one. And Kaladin has some
not
really,
on my bingo board.
No, human fused, was not expecting that. Like humans, yeah. We'll talk about it. Ishar's weird. And Kaladin has some really good things to say, kind of back towards Nail, some really good discourse there. A little bit more of Wit's therapy session story is mixed into 128. And then we end with Adolin and Yonagon sneaking into the palace, and they realize that it's a trap.
It's a trap!
And that's it.
Okay. The best interlude we've ever received. Interlude 17. What'd you guys think?
Dieno, the mink. Right.
Oh, wait, I have to ask for two words first.
Oh, yes.
My bad. Okay. Paul, two words.
All right. My two words are unique and step. They kind of go together, but kind of not necessarily.
You cut out there. Unique and what?
Unique and step.
Step. Okay.
Like a, it could. Part of that reference is for Dalinar stepping up to the Contest of Champions and where we're headed with that. And also you could extrapolate that a bit with like Yonagon stepping up and things like that and all the things going on here. Unique is the bigger word. That's the one that came to my head right away. And that is for the story with the lumberman's son that Hoyd gives. I really, really liked this one. I thought it was really fun. And I could just, you know, we've been with these characters for so long that I feel like I just can pick up on what they like and don't like a lot, which sounds odd to say because they're fictional characters. But I feel like Hoyd had a blast doing his story therapy session with Dalinar. Because Dalinar sits and thinks through this whole thing and comes away with a logical conclusion. And I just feel like Hoyt had a blast with that. I don't know what to say about it. The whole like takeaway, we could talk about it now, or I have more to say, so we'll let it go. But unique is largely tied to the takeaway Dalinar has about us all kind of being our own person. That's what provides people with a lot of their strength and value, I guess, is being your own person. But that with that story, the lumberman's son, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Elliot?
I have two words. I'm going to fit them into a sentence, but the sentence is not really my words. There's two words in the sentence that are the two words. It's not cheating. Just go with it.
Wow, this my we're two really words. Stretching the rules here. We're really
no,
stretching.
No,
you better wow
you'll,
me here.
Go ahead.
You'll be fine with this. You'll be fine with this as soon as I say it. It just the two words go together, so I got to stick some conjoining words. I'm just going to say it. The words are the cost of peace. So the two words there are obvious, cost and peace. I'm referencing Kaladin here. I mentioned this in my summary a little bit. In response to Nail, Kaladin has a great line about there are some things we should not do, even for the right reasons. And Zeth and Nail are kind of pushing him on, well, shouldn't there be someone who like does the terrible things so that everyone else has peace? And Kaladin rebuts it really well, I think, and says there are some costs we should not pay. I think he's absolutely right. I'm really excited to talk about it, and we'll get to it in chapter 128. And yes, my senses is fine. You can't rag me.
I give you pass on the sentence. Whenever you first read it, though, I thought your words were going to be. Well, I thought your words were going to be the end of. That's like a cringe joke. The cost of peace.
No, your sentence is absolutely not excused. Even though it's a great scene, you don't get. 5-6 words just because you need some colors.
The cost of peace. Come on, Trevor. That's 4.
All right. Re-edit it. Go back. Cost peace.
Thank you.
Great. We're snipping. We're cutting all the rest of that from the episode.
Okay. Who would have thought? Go ahead.
I was going to say, so now are we talking about DNO?
Yes. Who would have thought that as we got closer to day 10, the less relevant our interludes would have gotten, not more. Who guessed that?
I did not. And I think, honestly, I think I have one negative comment to say in this episode. What one negative comment, if I'm allowed that. And I think it's the DNO interlude. There are some neat things, and I wonder if this is going to come back, because we do end on kind of a crazy scene. But I don't know. This is a negative comment, not because it's not good or it's not supposed to be there, but because I was expecting to flip into interludes for day 10. I'm flipping metaphorically because I'm doing the audiobook. I flip forward and I was expecting this day 10, interlude 17, to be something like either groundbreaking or question answering or profound or something like that.
It was both in both literal senses. I was mostly joking. I will defend this interlude for all those who want me to listening, but finish your sentence, Paul.
Okay. I guess I wasn't expecting this DNO scene, and so he's just basically trying to worm his way out or delay his execution by, you know, distracting and asking for a mallet and kind of questioning the people and whatnot. And then this crazy great show comes out at the end. I'm assuming that's the important thing. Obviously, that's like the big thing, and we're like, whoa, okay, big great show. But I guess I this is not the picture I had in my head. So how dare Brandon not match exactly what I was expecting flipping the page here into the interludes for day 10.
No, this fits perfectly, and I'll explain why. But Elliot, which side do you land on of the
scene? Well, I'm going to bash it a little bit, and then you can maybe try and save it.
Yeah,
for me.
Go for it.
Did anybody else get like Captain Jack Sparrow vibes out of this chapter?
I was going to say it if you didn't. It's a mix of Captain Jack Sparrow and Robin Hood.
Yeah, it's not good, though. It's cheesy. It's cheesy. It bordered into super cheesy for me. It was silly. It was good. It's what I expect from an interlude. I actually don't have any issue with this kind of thing popping up in an interlude for real. But if you're about to try and tie this together into the grander theme of the book, I might make fun of you a little bit.
Well, not the grander theme. No. Okay. Well, maybe. So here's the whole point of the interlude. Yes, it's silly. Yes, it's crazy that this massive great show that we've never seen before pops up. It's highlighting the fact that there really is nothing else besides the contest. All of our side quests have failed. All of them. The only thing we have is the contest. That's the point here.
Okay. I grant you that.
I guess.
I grant. Well, and while that is true, while it is true that all of our other attempts have failed and not panned out, I will refute a little bit that we only have the Contest of Champions. Obviously, it comes down to that specifically with Dalinar, but they say at the start of this book, the wind tells Kaladin that his quest may be even more important than the Contest of Champions.
Sure.
And also the pointings to Shallan and Renarin and company with Ba'ed O'Mishram as well. That's me being nitpicky. I know what you mean. The essence of what you're saying is pretty spot on. I think that's fair to say.
As far as like territorial goes, yes, we still have the Shinnevar thing going on. Yes, we still have the spiritual realm thing going on. But we're highlighting the fact that we're not gonna, like, Herdaz is gone, is the point here. And we're not gonna go live in exile in Herdaz if we lose the contest. Like, that we're all in on the contest here. That's the point.
It does. I think you're right. It does set the stakes, I guess, for what we're about to head into. But I think I just lost it a little bit on the final line of the inner, literally the last sentence, because it's so cheesy.
Oh, that's a finale.
Right. Okay. So he sees this great shell thing. It's the size of a city, which that's super cool. Super epic. I want to see that. I'm imagining what that looks like. Super cool. And then the mink, who up until and is like, yeah, I could have gotten out of that, you know, kind of thing. And then all of a sudden now he's dropping, you know, the comedic relief lines threw me a little bit. And then the irony of what he's saying there is not lost on me in the slightest. We are entering into the finale of the entirety of Stormlight Era 1. And how does Brandon set that up for us? A character literally saying, well, that's a finale. Little on the nose.
Right. It's not funny to you? Like
It's cheesy.
We're going
to look at cheesy.
Would it make you feel better if Hoyt said it?
Yes.
Okay, I have Far to better. Add. So this obviously, I mean, Brandon certainly has this Herdazian thing down, because it feels very much like a Lopin scene. Like, it's, you could interchange Lopin into here. I bet even, I feel like, I'm sure it wasn't, but I feel like there could have even been a draft somewhere where Lopin is actually the one in this scene. And like, he could have kept most of the dialogue the exact same. Fair Maybe enough. Throw in like a one-armed joke or something would have been the difference, but
yeah, he had to swap characters because Lopin couldn't get both his hands out from behind his back or something.
Something like that, even though he has both arms now. So
correct.
Anyways. But, and this is funny because I need to look and do like a deep dive on the difference between the writing of Lopin and the Herdazians and Wayne from Mistborn. Because personally, I really like Wayne. And I really struggle with Lopin as like comedic relief. Lopin has always felt cheesy to me. And minor spoilers for Mistborn Era 2, not actually story spoilers, but like things about Wayne. I think it's hilarious that he's crazy rich and has no idea like what money is. And like, he keeps doing stupid things and it's being massively successful, like business ventures and like the invention of sports and things like that. Like, I think that's really funny, and his dialogue is, and I don't know, the Herdazians have been a bit much for me. So I agree with Elliot. I think it kind of lost me when, maybe it shouldn't have, maybe I'm being mean. I'd be curious to know what other people think about it, but this interlude lost me a little bit. I feel like it was fairly cool. I was invested, and I don't know, it just kind of cut the wrong way a bit. And of course, we're nearing the finale, and so I'm more on edge about everything, you know? And so, I don't know. Maybe I'll look back. I probably won't care in a week, but we just read this, so ideas are, the thoughts are fresh on my mind.
If there was a modern-day Stormlight Era, you would get a D&O the Mink comic book series. 100%. It'd be D&O and his grand adventures, Captain Jack Sparrow-esque, and I'd be here for it. I like Herdazians personally, and their chowta.
That's why you're not funny, Trevor.
That's so hurtful.
I'm sorry.
All right, interlude 18. Yeah, Odium's ready. Next chapter.
That's a great summary. I'm going to be honest, I listened to this interlude twice. I listened to all these chapters, like this whole reading, two times. Both times, I listened to interlude 18 without really recognizing it at all. Like, literally, like, nothing. Yeah, Odium is ready. I think that's a perfect, succinct summary. Chapter 126. Intro, huge list of names we're going to get a perspective from. And we kick it off with Dalinar.
I did notice some weird, like, time frame shenanigans going on, that the beginning of 126 is actually before interlude 18 in the timeline, because in interlude 18, Tyrion's like, oh, there's Dalinar getting popped out in Yirithiru. Thank goodness. And then in chapter 126, we back up like 30 seconds, see the last of the movie, and then get spat out in Yirithiru. And I was like, we couldn't have put that in 125, but whatever. All right. Dalinar's back in Yirithiru. He has learned, I guess, all that he needs to know about the contest. He's learned enough to know that he can't win. That's the conclusion he comes to, is that the contest is still worth doing, but we need to have a plan B. We need to actually beat Odium and not just play this contest, is the conclusion he comes to.
This is a genuine question. Is it we need a plan B, or is it more of a fatalistic, we're going to lose this challenge, but the right thing is to do it anyway?
Well, it's both. It's I'm going to do this challenge because it's the right thing to do. But this doesn't beat Odium, and I need to think about how to beat Odium. Like, yeah. He talks about that with the Stormfather, and the Stormfather's like, oh, no, you can't fight him. And it's like, Dalinar's like, dude, I was watching. I get it. I get it. We still need to figure out how to beat him, because this contest isn't going to solve anything for us.
And the consequence of not beating Odium, like, let's say we even somehow win the challenge, we still haven't saved Roshar. We can save the Cosmere. This comes up a couple times throughout these sections. So Dalinar kind of recognizes we've succeeded in containing Odium. And regardless of the outcome, we think we're going to be able to maintain that. The problem is the repercussions for Roshar specifically could get catastrophic and will probably continue to be forever unless we can somehow deal with Odium permanently, is where I feel like Dalinar kind of gets to here.
Correct. And this goes into a little bit at 127, but it's relevant. Adolin actually has an interesting line in his mental dialogue. He's thinking about his dad throughout these chapters ever since the end of day 9. He's been thinking about Dalinar. And at the end of at the beginning of 127, he thinks, man, if Dalinar loses, it's literally going to be Yirithiru versus the world minus Dalinar, or Yirithiru minus Dalinar versus the world. And then he dismisses it like, oh, he's not going to lose, though. He's Dalinar. He does finally have his faith back in his father. He just needs to go tell him that. But that made me think back to chapter 7 of this book, of the King Kaladin discussion that we had, where before Kaladin goes on his quest, Dalinar shows Kaladin the will of the tower, that if me and Navani get knocked out or out, whatever, before we go to the spiritual realm here, I want you to inherit Yirithiru and the Knights Radiant specifically. So when Adolin made that distinction of, if we lose, because Thalen has dropped off, we've lost Azir, maybe, and Herdaz is gone, the Shattered Plains are gone, because we've lost all this territory, it's going to genuinely be Yirithiru versus the world. I might be on the prediction train that we might lose this, and it might be Yirithiru versus the world to end the book, which is crazy to me. You muted yourself again.
I did, my bad. It's very possible. It's been a possibility, I think, this whole book for me, that we may not have Roshar at the end of this book. So I wouldn't be too surprised by this Yirithiru versus the world scenario at the end. We've already lost Garbranth entirely, so you know Roshar is going to look different. Even if nothing else gets destroyed, you've lost Garbranth. Like, that's a big,
yeah.
That's a big deal, you know. But yeah, going into this, it is funny, because I feel like I've spent the whole book thinking, how is Dalinar going to lose? Which I don't like, I like when we win. I like when the good guys triumph over evil and Odium is kept at bay and all these things. But they've certainly set it up to be like, well, Dalinar, you're going to lose. But that's even part of what Hoid says, I think. He's like, you're going to lose, but you're going to show up. It's better to show up than to no show in his story. But I don't know if the twist is going to be he somehow wins. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this.
I guess it's full send on prediction time. I do have something to say, but Elliot, do you have anything to add before I get on a soapbox?
Just to say that I too am afraid of losing or catastrophe or whatever that looks like, because I feel like a lot of the foreshadowing is pointing that way. Our literal chapter headers on the page are falling apart to nothing. There's so much that is pointing to catastrophe as the result of this. So where is this going to go? I don't know. Well, you're about to ask me where it's going to go, and I'm going to have to give you a prediction.
Well, yeah, I'll throw it to you after this prediction that I'm about to make. I think we are going to lose the contest in the next, like, five chapters. But I think we will defeat Taravangian in the following chapters. I think Dalinar will be in service to Odium, but somehow the shard of Odium is altered in some, Mistborn spoilers, in some like Hero of Ages way. The definition of the shard is changed by the end of the book. I don't know exactly the format of that. I'm not really going to guess, but I think the shard of Odium does not look the same by the end of this book, even though we lose the contest. That's my prediction.
I kind of like that. I don't think I can refute that. I could see those pieces falling together for sure. And it might, that could be a way for us to get a fantasy story happy ending potentially, while also having the catastrophe that it feels like everything has been pointing to. So you could get kind of all of that wrapped into the Sanderlanch of this book, the climax. Do you want our predictions too?
Yes, of course.
I'll fire mine, but, and then I'll pass it off to Paul.
Final chips on the table. We've come so far.
Oof, we have. This is big. And I feel like I should be more confident in my prediction based on all that we know.
Right. We're only like 60 pages from some big reveals, and we still don't know.
Like you said, the next five chapters I think are going to be massive. So what exactly is going to happen here? Man, I feel like I should know better. I think, so in chapter 126, Dalinar makes one final try to ascend to the Shard of Honor, and it rejects him. And the honor shard says, nope, sorry, humans break oaths.
Yep.
Won't take you. I still think something's going to happen that causes the power of honor to recognize that Dalinar has become the most honorable human out there. And maybe that's something like lose the contest, but accepts, you know, holds up his end of the deal and accepts servitude under Odin, like something big like that. And the power of honor goes, oh, wow, you just kept an oath. And oh my goodness, look at all these other times in this story you kept oaths, and there's no other being out there who's going to match that as well as what you've done. I'm not going to be able to find someone that's better than that. I'll finally accept you. And then what that means at that point, I don't know. I don't know how, what that sets us up for. Do we get an honor versus Odium showdown where they try to fight it out like Tanavast tried in the past? I don't know. But I think the surprise is going to be Dalinar does somehow still get the Shard of Honor.
I think that was awesome, Elliot. I think that's genius. I've even had the thought running with that a little bit. I wonder if Dalinar going into the service of Odium is what Honor's power needs to confirm that he would not break an oath, because he would be bound by right. said whatever.
Exactly.
You know, that's pretty sneaky if that's the case. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I've been wrestling with this quite a bit, obviously. It's only played to the last year of my life. I pretty convinced we will not be winning the contest of champions. The question is, where does that leave us? My gut reaction is that we will lose and things will look desperate and bad. But there being how we've had our archways, our chapter headers degrading and crumbling over time. I'm wondering if it's essentially like everything has crumbled, but there's going to be like the glimmer of hope of someone beginning to rebuild or something along that line of like things are destitute and we're not ending this book walking away victorious. Odium is no more and Roshar is safe, but we are essentially defeated, but there is hope we're holding on to. And then that hope is what we will build off of in the back half. I think that makes a crazy, epic 10-book arc that's not the happiest ending for book 5. So I'm hesitant to really believe that would happen, like, full stop and everything. My prediction for a long time, before we started the book, was Dalinar was going to lose the contest, and from that position, either find a way to impact the greater Cosmere or save Roshar or something as a servant of Odium. But that was under my guess also that this contest would be happening much earlier in the book. That could still be the case. We just don't have time to see much afterward, unless like next chapter is like this contest of champions, and then we've got this figured out. So. So final guess is I do think we're going to lose the contest of champions. I do also think that someone is going to hold Honor. Of course, front runner guesses Dalinar, but someone's going to, and like Trevor said, it's been pointing a lot lately to this idea almost that if you changed Odium or held two shards, as we said with like Mistborn Era 1, could change things. But then I feel like we're literally getting rinse and repeat of Mistborn Era 1. And I don't think that's how this is going to go. I don't think we're going to see that. But yeah, I stick with my prediction that it's going to be destitute, but a glimmer of hope of rebuilding Roshar.
Elliot, what about the honor monster? Are we going to see the sentient honor power monster come back? you mentioned that a couple episodes ago.
That's a different path. That's potentially still on the table.
It was mentioned again in 126 that it's like coming alive and watching us.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've branched away from that in my like guessing of what's going to happen, but you're right. I think there are still some threads that could come together to form that picture, which would be the power of honor coalescing into some investiture monster that's not supposed to be, because it's supposed to be paired up with a vessel kind of thing. I don't feel like we're setting that up anymore, but maybe that's the twist. I don't know.
We'll have to find out. Anything else on the Dalinar stuff? We've got a lot of Adolin stuff to talk about, but what about that therapy session? Do you guys have more on the therapy session?
I do have more on the therapy session. So I want to talk a little bit about this story that Hoyd shares, the story of the lumberman's son. He sets up this story where, it's apparently a true story, right? That Hoyd tells. Way, 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 thousands and thousands of years ago, people were wondering if a lowborn could learn, I guess, the things that the nobles know. I'm summarizing or paraphrasing this quite a bit. And essentially, he has this lumberman son has these tests to do and can't complete them. But the last one is to create an original or unique piece of poetry. And this is the whole point that Hoyt gets at, that there is nothing. He essentially says there's nothing new under the sun. There's humans been around before them. He said there were dragons and then before them, so other stuff. Like, there's basically nothing new. You can't really come up with anything original. But what makes it original is you being the one to do it. And I thought about this quite a bit because I'm like, okay, well, I'm like, if two people back to back read the same thing, there's really not going to be much difference. Right? That was the first logical jump that I made in my brain. But then I thought about it more. And of course, what Hoyt is getting at is we are all unique and individual. There is no one else like you. And there will never be someone else literally just like you. You know, there's lots of people who are similar, have same interests and things like that, even look similar. But you are always going to be individual. And he kind of leaves Dalinar with this message. And I have a feeling that Dalinar is going to pull from this in a really epic, awesome way. Maybe if something does happen good with the Contest of Champions, it may come from this. Yeah, so it's almost like half baked a little bit, or maybe three quarters. Hoyt paints this picture of originality and uniqueness in each person as a beautiful thing. And Dalinar is like, that's awesome and that's profound, and I like that. But then they both look at each other and like, but that's not gonna win you this contest. You're still screwed. But I did happen to like this. It wasn't maybe as cool visually as like The Girl Who Looked Up or The Wander Sailor, some of the other stories that Hoyt has brought, but I found it refreshing because it was direct. Like, Hoyt is trying to pull the Brandon treatment of like, I don't have any meaning in these stories, I just share them and you derive the meaning. But they talk about a deliberate meaning together, and I find it really refreshing to read and to take part in.
I agree. I will admit, I gave up hope on a Hoyt therapy session. It dawned on me about day 7. I was like, oh, man, nobody's hanging out with Hoyt to give a therapy session to, except for like Lyft. So maybe we could get a Lyft therapy session. And then literally at the 11th hour, we got a Hoyt therapy session.
We got a mini one at the very beginning with Kaladin. Kaladin's not sure if he's going to go on the journey right, and Hoyt is like, hey, practice the flute.
Well, yeah, but he didn't tell him a story. Did he tell him a story?
He doesn't tell him a story, but he has... I don't think
I want my picture book, like flip book story.
Okay. We hadn't seen
that
yet.
The dog and the dragon.
Correct. I want my Wander Sail pop-up book.
You get the Lumberman
Isaac Stewart, by the way. Dragon Steel Wet. Are you listening? Wander Sail pop-up book, please.
Yeah. No, so you did. Thankfully, you did get that, Trevor. It on day 10, the last possible day, you got it. So
thankfully.
I mean, I feel like if I could keep bringing up things about it, I'll do my best to move forward. I absolutely like Dog and the Dragon was like my favorite part of, maybe not my favorite overall, because there's so many good parts in book 4 as well, but like absolutely loved it. Loved that there was like a clear takeaway at the end. It was just very refreshing, very fun. Absolutely loved it. Fun visuals. And so I'm really like nerding out about it. One other thing that I have to add at the end is they are like, well, you're still not going to win this whole contest thing, but you know, this is a good sentiment to take with you. Hoyt is very sincere at the end of this. He looks at Dalinar and says, I'm glad you are the one doing this. He admits that he does not know how this is going to go, but that also Odium does not necessarily know how this is going to go. They cannot see what lies ahead. And that's quite scary, but Hoyt, y'all could probably quote it more directly than I can. He says something along the lines of, like, you won't be going up there a man or something, but as a king, you'll be going up those steps.
Right.
As a king. And that was part of my reason for the step word that I used. Of one, he's physically there's the imagery of him physically going up these steps, but also it's just like the next step that Dalinar has to take. I'm just thinking more from the scene. They also talk about destination. We've had this whole journey before destination, and it's what you do on the path to destination that is most important. Journey before destination. But now they're like, okay, but we're at the destination now.
We're here.
That's also very important. And yeah, to me, this was the most impactful part of this whole episode. I absolutely loved this scene. Funny enough, my other scene that I count as my favorite in this book is what you mentioned, Elliot, of the Kaladin Hoyd mini therapy session at the start of the book. It still sticks with me, and I think it's so good. So when Hoyd gets sincere, those are like my favorite scenes in this whole Stormlight story. It's so good.
We need some genuine Spren or sincerity Spren.
Exactly. When Hoyd locks in.
Real moment Spren.
Yeah. Whenever he locks in and stops dilly-dallying. Oh, it's so good.
Dalinar even says that in the scene when he first pops up. He's like, Wit, no more jokes. Let's get real. And Wit's basically like, okay, you want real? Let's do it.
Exactly. I love it.
Speaking of locking in, Adolin and Yonagon have come to the conclusion that they've lost. Until Yonagon thinks, wait a minute. Well, it's actually Adolin's idea first. Adolin thinks, wait, all we need to do is sit you on the throne at the moment, at the exact second. We need to have a stopwatch. Even if we're surrounded by enemies, if we push you onto the throne and sit you there at the moment, then we win. And Yonagon's like, great, I'm an ex-thief, I can get us in there. And my favorite part of this whole exchange over these three chapters is the secret back gate for like the smugglers. Like, what's her name? The I should know her name by now. It's the end of book five. The Nora. Yonagon, yeah, Nora. Nora turns to Yonagon after Yonagon says, oh, there's a secret back gate we can walk in that smugglers use. And Nora's like, no, there's not. How dare you? And Yonagon's like, no, trust me, that there is. I'll show you. That was my favorite exchange. And like the whole Yonagon sequence was very good.
I agree that was really funny. I have to say, all I've been able to think about with this whole premise of all we need to do is have you on the throne and we win is there's a game I grew up playing. Such an excellent game, such an excellent series. I don't know if either of y'all ever played it, but hopefully some of our listeners have played Fire Emblem at some point in your life. Essentially in Fire Emblem, you have a series of chapters going through this whole story. And about half the time, at least in the older games, your objective, it was effectively you have this battlefield, right? You're trying to win. And half the time, your objective is only to seize the throne. And then you win. Does not mean you have to defeat all the enemies or things like that. All you have to do, if you can get your main character onto that throne, boom, it's like nobody else is there. The war's over. You've touched the throne. You've claimed the land. You're all done. And I could not stop thinking about this of like, all they need to do is by this certain hour, Yonagon simply needs to be on this throne. That's it. Like, it doesn't matter if everyone else is like, if they're literally about to die, 2 seconds after. He just needs to have his butt in the seat, like, and we cool, you know? And I just thought it was funny. I couldn't think about that. I'm sure, surely someone knows what I'm talking about with the Fire Emblem reference, but yeah. Could not stop thinking about it the whole time.
I wish I had more Fire Emblem references to give you, but I don't. I apologize.
That's okay. I'm quite sorry about that.
I want to talk about Maya. Maya and Adolin have a back and forth about Adolin, you know, being worthless. And Maya's like, no, you're not worthless. You're doing great work here. And then Maya's like, oh, I'm worthless because we lost the city anyway. And then Adolin's like, no, you're doing great work here. And it made me think, okay, obviously this is going somewhere. Where is this going? Well, like, what was Maya doing? We still don't know. Any ideas?
It does feel rather pointless at this point. Brandon is a very good writer. He knows what he's doing here. So there's a reason. There is a reason why this happened. Maybe we're going to get a big reveal. Maybe there's something else. But it almost felt like a plot line that got forgotten. That Maya's heading off to save the day and bring the cavalry, and then there's no cavalry. There's no save that needs to be. I don't know what's going on here.
How many honor spreads is she going to bring? What's 2. The over under? 2? All right, over under on 2, Paul. More or less than that.
I think it's going to be under.
I think it's one honor spren.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one honor spren.
And Notum, that's it.
Yeah, well, sorry, not including Notum, if we're counting that as Maya brought. I think there's going to be one honor spren, and it's going to bond with... I think it's going to bond with Yonagon, and...
There we go.
Okay.
There we go.
And he's going to fly up to the throne and sit on top of it.
He's going to fly to the... Yes, exactly. Or either that or like the... Yeah, something. So he'll have the teleportation one or whatever and teleport right onto the throne at the last second. Something like that.
I was trying to think about, could she have a herald? Didn't our herald that was hanging out with the honor... Didn't he get captured? Like, he's not there anymore?
Who?
So...
Kalak?
Yeah, that guy. He was chilling with the honor spren, right?
Paul's a big Kalak fan. What happened to Kalak, Paul?
I was going to say, I think the last time we've seen him was in that interlude or early chapter with Felt and Kelsey.
Our first interlude, yes.
Literally, yeah. Okay, not to go back and rag on Deano again, but why aren't we getting like an update on that?
No. Hold on. Whoa.
Instead of Deano being like, can you use a mallet?
This would be Deano defense hour, but here we go again. No, man. Deano is an important character.
Oh my god!
Much more important than Kalak, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, whatever.
Kalak's just the sleazy guy in the background who doesn't want any responsibilities in his entire life.
Okay, but okay, tell that to Nail's character, who's been the worst character so far, and now he's trying to help us for good.
Uh huh.
And you know, why couldn't we have a situation like that with Kalak or some kind of connection?
We could have. No, we could have. Kalak, no. Kalak was like, instead we get Deano. I'll give you
now that's a finale.
I'll give you 2 words of advice, and then you go off and do your quest. I'm not helping. He could have helped.
I agree. No. And then he got kidnapped.
Instead, he's kidnapped by the Ghostbloods.
Kidnapped, and like, that's it. That's the last we've seen of him, and I'm quite sad because it's been
Miss Guinevere 3.
That's fair. It's been a Herald-centric book, way more than I expected. And Kalak gets abducted, and that's the end of it. And I'm like, man, no, he was been given no chance to come back. Anyways, but yes, that's where Kalak is. It's a shame you reminded me.
No, Kalak's not going to help us, Elliot.
I'm going to be honest. I don't even remember where we left off before you mentioned Kalak, because I just got so triggered
Elliot,
so upset about it.
Elliot was wondering what on earth we could have gotten from Lasting Integrity that we haven't already gotten.
That's fair. Okay, yes. Yep.
Yeah, Rafa, I guess.
Yeah. So anyways, Yonagon will be a Knight Radiant, and that's what's going to save the day here.
I think it'll be one of the Azish guys that we've been hanging out with, either Gazamol or the other guy. I don't remember their names.
Kolot, or am I making that up?
No. Kolot's the turned aside wind runner from last book.
Yes, I've been thinking about that.
Oh,
but well, they mentioned. I don't remember it from last book personally. I remember it from earlier in this book because they talk about it, right?
Yeah,
Adolin and Kolot talk about it.
Because he's a Light Eyes, and his friend's like, I actually don't like Light Eyes, and like he took that really personally.
Yeah.
But he had like this resolution moment with Adolin like not that long ago about it, and so it's probably not going to be Kolot.
Yeah, he was like, he said, I'm happy being single. Essentially, that's what he was saying.
I'm working on me.
Yes. Yeah, he's working on himself right now. Which is fine, and I think that was a great little conclusion. But
ended the situationship with his Windrunner spren.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of, do y'all think that we're going to end the book with Kaladin and Syl falling in love? We should probably give our final predictions.
No,
on that
I
now.
Don't want to predict this. Either yes or no.
Yes,
I don't
predict this. And I'm mad about it, but I think it's going to be a yes. I'm calling it now.
There's one too many head on the shoulder scenes for me.
There have been a lot.
Okay, well let me rephrase
in
that.
In this book,
one is too many. That's not what I meant. There are one too many for me to think that's not happening. There have been so many scenes that I think it is happening. That's what I meant.
Yeah, they can't move forward about it this book.
I think that might be a not so subtle attempt to try and twang our heartstrings a little bit, in that one of the two of them is not going to survive. And it's going to be meant to be sadder than it would have been, because we've fed this little bit of, and there's more to their relationship. Oh no, one of them dies.
And that is?
Of the two?
Yeah. It's not Kaladin. It's gotta be Syl.
I think it's Syl. If I had to put my bromes on it, I would say Syl.
You want to know something that I don't know is if it's sad or logical or what, but I would be more relieved if that was the purpose than if it was they're gonna fall in love.
I think they will be separated, but not dead.
Ooh,
I think
change their Facebook status to it's complicated.
Correct. No, I think Kaladin Syl will confess her love, unfortunately, and then Kaladin will be locked on Braze as new herald or whatever, and then they're like separated by distance.
Whoa.
Or whatever.
That'd be big.
That's not one that I had on my bingo card, but that's pretty cool. Yeah, we do still have this whole new herald thing going on.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's going to get, I'm guessing that's going to get dropped, but I don't know.
We're still in day 10 and it's picking up, not being dropped.
Yeah, I know. But like, we just picked it up recently. So I don't know if it's a fake out right before the end, or if it's like, no, this is really where we're headed. So
I can't get out of my head the Renar and Relaine visions we had in like day 2 of the 12 people in Shinovar.
Oh yeah,
do you remember that one? There's like five different windows, and yeah, one of them, there's 12 different people, and one of them's definitely Syl, and they're all in Shinovar about to do something important, and I can't help but think that's like new heralds or something.
Man, how much is left of this book? Because like, they just had a lot of crazy stuff, and I'm getting more afraid of not getting the answers, but we could also flip the next page and it's like, everyone is dead. Roshar is destroyed. Everything is hopeless. The end.
I'm in the scattershot mode of predictions where something's bound to hit if I just keep throwing
them. Keep throwing out ridiculous stuff and something is bound to land. You're right.
If you spin me around with the pinata and I just start swinging, I'll hit it eventually.
Yeah, you're right.
There is one section in this Kaladin, Nail, Syl, Zeth conversation that I did want to focus in on for a second. It was the passage that I got my two words from. In chapter 128, Nail and Zeth are kind of arguing against Kaladin. And Zeth is still kind of plagued by his past, right? And he's kind of thinking, you know, is it okay to for someone to have to do bad things if that means that we can arrive at peace? And I think Zeth is ready to say yes to that. And Nail is absolutely kind of pushing that. Hey, like that's all I've ever done is do the bad things trying to get to the place. And Kaladin comes back at him. And I think what he says was really good. I liked it a lot. I wanted to read it and get your guys' thoughts. Here's what Kaladin says. Let me read Zeth's question to him first, actually. That'll give us better context. Zeth said, but what if someone has to make the difficult choices and do terrible things so that others may have peace? What peace? Kaladin demanded, waving his hands. You think people can live in peace knowing what it cost? Look, I don't have all the answers. I've told you that. But this isn't a question of a few people needing to make a terrible choice. That's a lie. Everyone everywhere faces these kinds of decisions. That's life. What kind of world would it be if every time such a decision came up, we forced ourselves to sacrifice? Not giving up our lives or time, but our integrity, our happiness, or our very identities. I thought they hit the nail on the head for me. I feel like we've come back to this question a lot of should you make the sacrifice in the short term for the long-term gain? I mean, that's what Taravangian is all about, right? That's been his mantra from day one is I can see the future. I know what we have to do. There's a greater good we're going to. And here's the 900 terrible things I have to do to get there. And I'm going to do every single one. And I feel like Kaladin's response there is really good. At what cost? When does the cost make it not worth it? And I think what Kaladin is getting at is that cost is, it might be fairly low that you should not pay. The earning of the peace by doing the bad things, that peace is not worth it. I really like that section.
Yeah, I liked it too. It plays directly off the Yasna debate that we had.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Of at what point do you sacrifice your, you know, your identity, your integrity to achieve peace, in quotes? The name of the book should be The Cost of Peace, your four words, not two from the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, I was actually wondering as I was putting some notes together on this if that could leak into my like takeaway theme for the entire book when we get to the end of it. Is that going to be a major take? It highly depends on what's coming up here. I don't know. We could see this go a different way, but very much that question of, and in the Taravangian versus Yasna with Fenn, the question was kind of about safety and security. What are you willing to do to guarantee your safety? And I feel like the answer should have been, well, I'm not going to side with evil, even if it does mean safety. And Kaladin here is kind of saying, I should not do wrong things, even if that leads to the path of peace. Maybe I should accept not peace if it means doing the right things. I think that's super applicable for me. I can think of how that makes me think about my life. Good stuff.
Yeah. I agree. Anything else?
I think that was it for me.
Okay. We can reconvene next week with what will surely be the Contest of Champions. Been waiting for this for 5 years, and we're 1 week away. Next week we have Hold That Thought, chapters 129 through 131 from Tim Nodon. So thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Here we go.
Toodles.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.